It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 29th day of December, 2022. This is The Horn. Head on .live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, all times in between and the great globe round. And whatever time it is where you are when you're listening to the podcast. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you wander over to the chat room just right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers. Irish Dave and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, y'all. And yes, once again, it's a room full of cops. Led, of course, by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, chat room moderator. Oh, damn, Nick Ups. Sparky. I tend to put in one of those little pouches just before the show, and that's what happens. Maybe I'll learn. But, yes, moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran, chat room moderator, Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage field navigator, has declined to pull its base. He is capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator, an all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, who is also, I want to send thanks out to Steve for being so kind and reaching out to me relative to the kind of shitty news I got yesterday at the doctor's office. Thank you, Steve. That was really, really sweet, and I really appreciated it. It gave me a little boost, and I've spent the day going, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. So it was very kind of you, and just, I'm trying to get into the idea, just sort of, you know, you have to visualize, you know, if you ever read Zen and the Art of Archery, you have to visualize the arrow hitting, the bullseye. And I'm trying, and so, you know, I looked at Annette a little bit ago and I said, hey, you know what? You start working on your beach bod in January, not June. So, maybe I can sort of talk myself into this better lifestyle by giving myself goals. And of course, in terms of chat room moderating, I would be remiss if I did not mention Horn Chief Agronomist and mathematician Roger in Oregon, also trimmer of Bud. Although I think Bud trimming is over for now. Thanks, Steve. Steven, you got this, friend. I hope so. And I mean, I got to sort out what eating is going to look like. I mean, today it's been a bowl of beanless chili and six strips of bacon and about a third of a jar of kimchi. I am not satiated, to say the least, because it's when you start thinking about all the, you know, can't have that. Because, you know, I just bebop out to Swiftwater and grab myself a couple of hot dogs and come home and be happy. Well, those days are gone. Ooh, that looks good, Roger. Those pickled ají amarillos? Because they look real tasty and real hot. Yeah, that looks nice. That looks real nice. But anyway, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and we would do the gratitude thing, but by virtue of the way that the calendar works, we have no subscribers for the 29th day of the month, nor the 30th. Maybe we've got one on the 30th. I'm not sure. But we have none on the 29th. And so just a general thank you to everyone who does subscribe. And the fundraising goal sits at $830. That's an $830 miracle to get us to the end of 2022, the end of December, and start with a clean slate, such as it is, come January 1, namely. I don't see why I would not be here January 1. It's not like, not like I've got any bowl games to really pay particular attention to. Although my fascination with college football has fallen off a little bit in the last couple of years. I don't know why. Might be drugs. Just as a general program note, there should be a program on Monday. I'm going to see if maybe I can talk to my local banker and afford a brisket to smoke. I don't know. Maybe the Christian will come and buy up all the briskets too. Jeez, I just love that. But thank you to each and every one of you who do help keep this program on the air. And tomorrow we will, of course, do the thank yous for our Patreon subscribers. Listen, we need PayPal subscribers. We need Patreon subscribers because it's a scramble and it's a struggle. And this has been probably the most struggle-laden year we've had. If you're thinking about it, feel free. If you can't, and you can kick in on the a la carte, that's cool, too. Thank you. Just thank you all the way around. Wow, the peppers. This just sounds delightful. Roger in Oregon says the peppers will take a month or so to ferment, and then it gets run through the food processor to be made into a paste and then jarred up and eaten. It's a very Peruvian hot sauce. It sounds fantastic. So you don't run it through a Foley food mill or a sieve or anything, Roger? That would be delight. Yes. So it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and a general reminder, pretty please. By the way, it's that time of the month. Stop that. No, it's the time of the month where Podbean fucks us. You know, my unlimited uploads Podbean thing, and it's not really. So yesterday's program didn't upload. Tonight's program will not upload. And tomorrow's program, I'll probably try to go back and upload them retroactively on sometime around, late on the 31st. Because I'm probably not going to be going out anywhere for New Year's Eve. But in the meantime, everything always goes up at whiterosesociety.org. Chris in Germany wrote to tell me that, yeah, that had in fact happened. It went up at White Rose, not at Podbean. And they suck. And we'll get back to uploading at Podbean on January 1. So, I'm sorry. But anyway, wherever you're listening to the program, please like it, please subscribe, and please leave comments. Brother Deacon Asa is absolutely obsessive compulsive about insisting that people leave comments, leave feedback, and, it's much appreciated. A couple of notes coming in. Our buddy David in Oregon says, sent an email a few days ago. Maybe anyway, I don't think it reached you. I wanted to and want to check in to let you know that I'm doing as well as can be expected after my first semester in law school. Learning the reality about some things was challenging to my naivete, but I guess that's what education is all about. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have the specifics, but things happen, especially in the first semester of the first year of law school. There's no doubt about it. You can get your brain rewired. Anyway, David says, I'm still waiting for my grades to come out. Grades should be out by New Year's Eve. I'm in the process of finishing my application materials, cover letters, resume updates, and whatnot for summer positions. I'll keep you posted as this law school journey continues. I hope to talk to you soon. Have a very happy new year, my friend, and to the Horn family. Thank you, David. Thank you. And the very same to you. Hey, here's hoping you make law review. Or order of the queef or whatever it is. Yeah. But we have high hopes for you. And everybody here believes in you. So thanks for letting me know, David. Letting us know. And you know, eventually maybe you can call the program and we can talk first year of law school war stories. And Dave, number 11, noting the only diet that works is 1,800 calories of whatever you want per day, every day for the rest of your life and no more. Everything else is bullshit. It may be true, but in my case, I really do have to back off the carbs and the starches for the sake of my A1C. And hopefully if I add in exercise, maybe in 3 months I'll be back down, back down in the 6 range, I hope. I'd love to be down to 5.5 or something like that, but we'll have to wait and see. Well, that's 6 strips of bacon. Darlene says, LOL. Instead of torturing yourself at the worst possible time of year, that's torture enough. Why not just get yourself into the gym and see if that helps with your blood work before you radically change your diet? You're already miserable, so it won't be sustainable. Thanks for your vote of confidence! But some of these things are got-tos, because I'd say over the last 4 months or so, I just kind of... especially as the cooler weather came on, it became ever so much easier to... Well, you know, it's fun to sit and watch a movie, and hey, you want a Mounds bar? Yeah, you want a Mounds bar? Yeah, I want a Mounds bar. Let's have a Mounds bar. And the next thing you know, those little no fun size Mounds. Well, they're tiny; they can't be that. And the next thing you know, the package is gone, and you're each sitting there telling lies to each other about the little mouse that came up and, while nobody was looking, ate the Mounds bars. But, I mean, there are things I can do. I was letting myself have sugar sodas, even though I knew damn good and well I had no business drinking them. And, again, an entire sleeve of saltines with a bowl of soup is not a great idea. And I just have to get back. I just have to get back into my vibe. And, hopefully. Adding in the exercise, I gotta get a little over a little hump with the exercise too. For some reason or another, I get really, really self-conscious walking into the gym, and all my friends say, "Hell, nobody looks at anybody else." I'm like, "Yeah, tell that to my weird little brain." So we're gonna have to break that and retool it too. But none of that matters. Because we've got Thorn in the Side Thursday to deal with. And I found this is actually a report from an NBC News program. Top story with Tom Llamas. And it has to do, we haven't talked about it a lot. We talked about it some when we, oh, okay. Dave, number 11, says not to start a pissing contest, but normal calories means normal weight means normal blood work. I have no disagreement with that. So let's see if I can find that wonderful place known as normal, which so often in my life has proven to be nothing more than a setting on a dryer. normal. Ultra, extra normal. One of my favorite lines from one of my favorite films. Dry, normal, or greasy? Normal. Extra normal. But Tom Mamas at NBC had an update on the quadruple murder in Moscow, Idaho, at the, is it the Idaho State or the University of Idaho? Because the investigation is tortuously slow. Cops are looking for, well, you'll hear. But it, there's an aspect of this story that just has Thorn in the Side Thursday written all over it.
We're back now and bring you to Moscow, Idaho. Police there are still investigating new leads and sorting through thousands of tips, trying to find a suspect in the murder of four college students. This while also trying to clear up widespread speculation online about a particular professor, saying that they do not believe she is involved at all. Steve Patterson has more.
Tonight, Idaho police making a plea to the public to help solve the quadruple murders in Moscow, Idaho. In a press release stating their focus, quote, remains on the investigation, not an individual's activities displayed in the tip, and to keep sharing, writing, your information might be one of the puzzle pieces that helps solve these murders. Also, still pursuing that 2011 to 2013 white Hyundai Elantra. Authorities say they have looked into more than 22,000 cars since identifying the car as a potential lead, and that they think the occupant of the car may have, quote, critical information.
We just want to talk to that person or persons in that vehicle to see what they may know.
In the 6 weeks following, police have yet to publicly identify any suspect, but now they're trying to clear up speculation around one person, a University of Idaho professor, Rebecca Schofield, the police saying at this time in the investigation, they do not believe she's involved in the crime.
I should probably add at this point, please get the hockey puck and the duct tape. Because this is going to spiral into madness pretty quickly. Rebecca Schofield is just a professor at the University of Idaho. But, and interestingly enough, this ties in with the conversation we had last night about TikTok. Turns out there's some TikTok toxicity. TikTok-cicity? Ooh, I think I made a word. There's some TikTok-cicity involved with this case because over on TikTok, a bunch of people who wouldn't know a criminal investigation from a hole in the ground have decided that, yes, of course, because they're on the internet, they're now qualified criminal investigators. And this one individual has created a nightmare for this young professor. Rebecca Schofield. So I'm just back this up so that we make sure we get it all.
The police saying at this time in the investigation, they do not believe she's involved in the crime.
At all.
Schofield was accused of the murders in videos by a self-described TikTok internet sleuth.
You know, it's probably a clue when you say TikTok internet sleuth. So they show clips of the TikTok showing this woman standing in front of her Christmas tree and shooting video of herself. Wait, Rebecca Schofield did draw up a lawsuit against me. Okay. You sure you want to do this, Rebecca Schofield? This isn't going to end well for you.
I believe she's involved in the crime. Schofield was accused of the murders in videos by a self-described TikTok internet sleuth who uses tarot cards.
Yeah, she's sitting there in her Alpha Kappa Alpha Boggin, and then she's showing tarot cards. Oh, really? Tarot cards.
Described TikTok internet sleuth who uses tarot cards, she says, helps solve crimes.
Well, Rebecca Schofield, the one who murdered the four Idaho college students, see my videos.
By the way, this freak's TikTok account is apparently Ashley is in the Book of Life. Yeah. Okie dokie. Good for you.
Helps solve crimes.
When Rebecca Schofield, the one who murdered the four Idaho College students, see my videos.
The videos were reposted and viewed by millions. The professor filed a defamation lawsuit denying any wrongdoing after the user refused to take down the videos. In the lawsuit, Schofield alleges her reputation was injured and that she was, quote, subject to online ridicule and threats.
And the woman who is creating all of this Sturm und Drang is someone named Ashley Gillard, G-U-I-L-L-A-R-D. And she's made scads of videos riding this professor's back with no evidence whatsoever, I guess, except her tarot cards. And won't even stop, even though she's been sued, because she's probably judgment-proof. Welcome to the early years of the third decade of the 21st century in the United States of America. Not to draw too bright a line, but I think there probably is a certain amount of connectivity between a couple of years, maybe more, of abject disdain for legal processes. And the fact that, this woman thinks that she has a right to simply defame somebody because, I don't know, her tarot cards told her. I wonder if she's vaxxed.
From online commenters, and now fears that she or her family will be the target of physical violence. It's just another example of the police responding to the tremendous amount of misinformation surrounding this case. They even have a rumor control section of their website.
I think rumors always hurt us in an investigation, but it's our job to go back and utilize our resources and to continue to vet those and make sure that all that information is still cataloged so that we have it.
Their focus is now on the thousands of tips left to sort through, reporting more than 7,000 email tips, 4,000 phone tips, and 4,500 digital media submissions. The family of one of the slain students, Kaylee Gonzalez, still questioning what truly happened that night and if police are handling the investigation correctly. Their attorney telling NBC News in a text, trust is earned, and they need to remember that because the way they've handled things so far haven't garnered much trust.
Yeah, but these families are absolutely destroyed in grief. And not knowing how it happened is, well, it's enough to drive a person mad. But by the same token, there has to be some accountability somewhere for people who, I don't know, solve crimes with TikTok and tarot cards. Nothing in here about whether TikTok has taken down these videos. The early clips from, what's her name, Ashley Gillard, show her actually threatening Professor Schofield. She sued me. You sure you want to do that? I mean, that's in the way of a nice house you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it, right? Ralph's asking, why can't this professor sue her? Well, she has sued her, but the problem is she probably has nothing worth suing over. You can get a judgment. And I don't know, maybe Ashley Gillard knows that. But what a sad and sorry situation, made even sadder and even sorrier by carrion vultures picking at the bones of the dead in a matter in which they have no knowledge whatsoever. You know, except their tarot cards. maybe it would be, well, we live in a new era now where people who deliberately immiserate victims of crime and do it on a broadcast basis can be held liable. In fact, somewhere in the stack, massive that it is, I've got the latest hissy being thrown by Alex Jones over the judgments against him for his promotion of absolute utter horseshit. In regard to Sandy Hook.
Steve Patterson joins us now from Los Angeles. Steve, students will start returning to campus as classes begin again next week. What is being done there to help them feel safe?
Yeah, Jake, the University of Idaho says it is adding additional personnel to their security team while also working with law enforcement to maintain a heightened presence on campus, enhancing neighborhood patrols close to campus, all so students feel safe when they return.
Okay. Good luck with all that. But the case has drawn massive amounts of attention. And it's a cultural phenomenon that people who have no connection to cases, who have no business speculating about them, do so nonetheless because there are no consequences. It is as if we live in a consequence-free, you know, and maybe just sort of pulling at the thread, maybe this is also related to the campaign of pissing and moaning about cancel culture. I don't know. But now you've got a professor, the entire university community's on edge. You've got a professor who is scared to death because she never knows when somebody associated with the tarot card lady is going to come to torment her. Stand by. Okay, back. Say hi, Annette.
Hi, Annette.
Say goodnight. Say goodnight, Gracie. Goodnight, Gracie. Okay. No. That's, Gil Gerard, Randy Radar. No, this is Ashley Gillard, G-U-I-L-L-A-R-D, who solves crimes with tarot cards. Oh, my. So it seemed like a really stupid place to get started because this is Thorn in the Side Thursday. But there are other places to go, like, for instance, the January 6th investigation. More information with the release of the report, journalism outfits are slowly making their way through the various witness testimonies. And so now we find the story of Ray Epps, E-P-P-S. He spoke to the January 6th committee. He's from Arizona, Stan, of course. And he was with the protesters, the terrorists, outside the Capitol on January 6th. And he's actually been victimized. This is kind of goes hand in hand with Professor Schofield up in Moscow, Idaho. He was present on January the 6th. And somehow or another, a rumor got started among the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing maggots, the terrorists, that he was an undercover FBI agent. Now, Epps was a maggot at the time. And in the interview that was released today, he said that now his kids are being picked on at school because of what he did. That he's gotten death threats. His business has fallen off. Weirdo maggots have shown up at his house. He told the J6 committee, "We had a tour bus come by our home and our business with all these whacked out people in it. There are good people out there that was in Washington. Name one. Those aren't the people that's coming by our house. This attracts, when they do this sort of thing, this attracts all the crazies out there." Yeah, but Ray, name who the crazies are. I don't mean by name, but at least take note of the fact that there aren't busloads of, you know, Antifa, Black Lives Matter crazies coming by to your house and talking mean to your kids. These are your people, Ray. He noted to the committee he wasn't working for the CIA, he wasn't working for the NSA, he wasn't working for the D.C. Metro Police Department. In fact, he went on to tell the J6 committee, "The only time I've been involved with the government was when I was a Marine in the United States Marine Corps." Now, he did have an association with the terrorist attack of January 6th, the night before the attack. Well, there was video of him telling other maggots that they ought to go into the Capitol. And I don't know if this was perjury or a sincerely held religious belief. That seems to be the magic word with the most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties of SCOTUS these days. And he said that he was under the legitimate belief that on January the 6th, the Capitol would be wide open to the public. And so what he said is, "The Capitol is the people's house and the rotunda. People can go into the rotunda and take a dump." No, I added that part. And see what's happening there. "My vision was get as many people in there as we can and surround it, be there, and let them know that we're not happy with what's happened, that it was no violence. I never intended to break the law. It's not my DNA. I'm sure you've looked at my record. I don't break the law." You know, except when you're committing a terrorist attack on the Capitol of the United States and trying to overthrow constitutional governance. "I never intended to break the law." Well, hey, David, out in Oregon, bet you've learned a little bit about this in the last semester or so. In instances like that, things like trespass, it's kind of a strict liability crime. You done it, you're liable for it. Over on the civil side end of things, there's an old law. It was the first thing I learned oh so many years ago. All liability is based on fault. Not a question of whether you meant to do it. It's a question of whether you did. Just, did you? Yeah? You're liable. On a civil, you know, from a civil standpoint. He has since learned that he was not supposed to go into the Capitol on January 6th. And part of that's where the trouble came from. He can be seen on video asking law enforcement how he can help move the attackers back from the police line and away from the steps. And then he tries to get them, the maggots, to calm down. And Epps went on to tell the January 6th committee, "I just looked around and I was sick. There was a lot of tear gas, a lot of bad stuff going on." He was trying to rescue one of the maggots and get him away from the violence. He said, "I saw people crawling all over the Capitol, climbing the walls. It made me kind of ill to my stomach. There was no point going back. It had gone beyond what I wanted it to be." And he went on to tell the committee how all these wild-ass conspiracy theories had shredded his very existence. But he nonetheless, I mean, and this is kind of proves something, he was still willing to bite on some of the bullshit. He said that Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky Stan and Matt Gaetz at Just Gaetz Worse of Florida Stan, and of course Marginal Trailer Queen of Georgia, So, I mean, it's real crazy stuff. And Massey brought that kind of stuff to the floor of the House. When that happened, it just blew up. It got really, really bad. Him and, gosh, Gates and Green, and, yeah, they're just blowing this thing up. So it got really, really difficult after that. The crazies started spreading the conspiracy, started coming out of the woodwork. But still, he's standing up for Nitwit Nero, saying, "Well, I think Trump just got bad information. I think he's being misled right now. I think he's surrounded by his people. But he surrounded himself by a few people that they don't have the truth, and they're going to try to push a narrative." So he's kind of like a little bit remorseful. Kind of wishes the crazies would leave him alone. But he's still a little bit among the crazies just the same. Oh, and I guess opening shots are being fired across the bow for the incoming denizens of Bedlam who will be running the House. Earlier today, the White House patiently informed Jim Jacket Off Jordan and James Comer, via separate letters, that the requests for information, including the Afghanistan withdrawal, that had been sent by Jim Jacket Off Jordan and James Comer, were improper until they actually get power next month. Richard Sauber is special counsel to the president, and he told those two jackasses that they lack authority right now, and they'll have to do your requests all over again once they get some power. Telling them, your demands were not made as part of the congressional oversight process, so we won't be responding. Should the committee issue similar or other requests in the 118th Congress, we will review and respond to them in good faith, consistent with the needs and obligations of both branches. We expect the new Congress will undertake its oversight responsibilities in the same spirit of good faith. And thankfully, it was in written form and not recorded, because that way nobody could hear Sauber saying, "Yeah, right, sure, when pigs fly, they'll act in good faith." So Hunter Biden, and prosecute Fauci! Right. Comer comes from Kentuckystan, and he's going to run the House Oversight and Reform Committee. Jim Jacket Off Jordan will be running the, oh my God, House Judiciary Committee. Comer was still pissing and moaning, saying that we're going to continue to press for the answers, transparency, and accountability that the American people deserve. This is ridiculous. You know, actually following the rules is ridiculous. Sure. Of course it is. But then again, these fools may well rewrite the entire history of absurdity come January 3rd and further. Although, speaking of January 3rd, there's a little problem, because it still looks like there are 5 holdouts in the House Freedom Caucus who say it'll be a cold day in hell when they vote for Kevin McCarthy, the man of silly putty, to be their speaker, which takes him down to 217 votes of the 218 he needs. And all Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats have to do is sit back and all emulate that meme of Kermit the Frog holding a cup of tea. But there's problems in maggot land in the House. If by some happenstance Kevin McCarthy cannot get his heart's wildest ambition and become Speaker, if that fight is not over by January 13th, 10 days after the Congress convenes, well, according to a guidance that was sent out to the House committees earlier this week, well, it could get to be real hard to, well, committees need to be aware that should a House rules package not be adopted by end of business on January 13th, no committee will be able to process payroll since the committee's authority for the new Congress is not yet confirmed. And since they don't have rules for the new Congress, and there are no rules for the new Congress, because the old Congress is dead, then, among other things, Republican staffers can't get, cannot confirm their enrollment in a student loan forgiveness program, and perhaps won't even be able to be paid. Darn. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Of course, that's going to separate the wheat from the chaff among the staffers for people like Andy Biggs, who says he will challenge McCarthy, and the other four members of the maggot holdouts like Matt Gaetz. I imagine their staffers enjoy getting paid. And one wonders if they will have the courage or their convictions, you know, when they can't pay their bills. Of course, that's just the staffers. The Congress creeps will keep on getting their checks. I confess, I'm a sucker for a good bit for some good drama, and a firm believer in come on, let's you and him fight when it comes to Republicans. Would that be an amazing thing to behold? Watching them fall to pit. And the best part of it is, if those five do hold out, that means that Kevers, man of silly putty McCarthy, may wind up having to belly crawl over to Hakeem Jeffries to ask him to pretty please help him be speaker. Now that would be a terribly emasculating thing for a manly man like Kevin McCarthy to have to do. And I'm guessing he wouldn't. Maybe he thinks somehow or another he can strong-arm the five weirdos. The funny thing, though, is the fact that there may be more weirdos tucked away that just haven't publicly announced that they are, in fact, part of the weirdo caucus. I admit... I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to get up on Wednesday, January the 3rd, and I'm going to fire up the telescreen, pop the popcorn, maybe get a bottle of rot gut tequila. Oh, I can't do that. And I wonder if I can do the popcorn. Stop it, Rod. It'll probably wind up being, Geraldo Rivera opening Al Capone's secret safe. Nothing in it. But it's damn sure fun to think about. Really fun. Oh, hey, Trey in Kentucky, Stan. Trey just letting me know that he's listening. Happy coming New Year to you. As to the House Judiciary Committee, Scott in San Diego, there at the home, says, now hold one kiss justice goodbye minute, Robin. Jordan's going to hit head House Judiciary? Not exactly a Peter Rodino of New Jersey, is he? Offhand, I can't recall which other decent and reality-based chairs of that committee, but Jordan, in comparison, is the absolute dregs. Yes, he is. He's certainly not going to be a Jerry Nadler. There's every possibility of that, too, Ralph. So January 3rd, will I be watching, hate watching Morning Joe, my filthy morning habit? Yeah, and my partner in broadcast shenanigans, Tara Devlin, will, too. It turns out that she gets up in the morning and hate watches Morning Joe, and I get up in the morning and hate watch Morning Joe, and then later, you know, we'll text each other and sort of go over the lowlights of the morning. Today, as a matter of fact, lo and behold, I know it's that sort of liminal time of the year where between Christmas and New Year's, where it's really just nobody doing much of anything. I mean, this morning Joe had a pre-recorded interview with Neil Sedaka that apparently began one day when they were each in some Tony restaurant, and Joe said, I looked over and I was like, hey, that's Neil Sedaka. And Neil Sedaka said, I looked over and said, hey, that's Morning Joe. Yes, because Morning is his first name. And so there was a canned happy interview about Neil Sedaka's long career. He's about to turn 84, I guess. And then later there was some talk about the Red Sox picking up a former two-time Cy Young winner. Well, okay. Breaking windows. Going back previous in the conversation, Stephen New York says, why would anyone think there was anything wrong with that? Happens all the time. Oddly enough, I read a little bit of trivia earlier this week, having had my good Christmas cry watching It's a Wonderful Life. And by the way, the Christmas cry watching Wonderful Life predates my transition, in case you're wondering. But then I read a story from the daughter of Donna Reed, who mentioned a little trivia fact that when they shot the scene where Donna Reed throws the rock and breaks the window in the old house that will later become the renovated, falling apart, better fixed with a book of matches, Bailey home, that the production team was all ready with a stunt man or a double to throw the rock and break the window. But it turns out Donna Reed had been a really, really good high school softball player where she grew up in Iowa. Hey, Billable Rick. And she said, no, I got this. And she actually broke the window on the first take. That was kind of charming. Subject line, GOP House Weirdos. Scott notes, delusional and demented effing lunatics is more like it. But that's a bigger mouthful, Scott. Scott, did you... Did you get your nicotine gum last night? I've been worried ever since. I also have been revisiting your original comment, which immediately made me start giggling, kind of helpless that way. And Nitwit Nero found a reason to celebrate today. With everything coming to a close, the January 6th committee has withdrawn a number of subpoenas that just, you know, got noses thumbed at them, including the subpoena for Nitwit Nero. So he went to his wobbly, failing, falling apart social media platform, Tangerine Tiberius did, and said, was just advised that the Unselect Committee of Political Thugs has withdrawn the subpoena of me concerning the January 6th protest of the crooked 2020 presidential election. Is that what it was? They probably did so because they knew I did nothing wrong, or they were about to lose in court. Perhaps the FBI's involvement in rigging the election played into their decision. In any event, the subpoena is dead. You know what's not dead? The criminal referral of four fucking felonies to the Department of Justice, dipshit. And if the grand jury happens to, indict your ass, you will go when they come along. Because if you don't, they'll show up with handcuffs and they will frog march your ass. Perp walk you. Isn't it amazing sometimes to realize that hundreds of millions of people are all wishing for the same thing? To see Marcus Aurelius in an orange jumpsuit with orange plastic shower shoes and handcuffs on behind his back, being perp walked in for his arraignment. It's a beautiful image. It really is. Oh, well, good. Nicorette Gum. Scott says, chomping on a chunk even as we speak. Good. I would hate for you to be agitated or discomfited here in your final days at the home. How's the rhythm section doing, Scott? You know, the rhythm section. Went and got my drumstick. I just don't have the vibe. I don't, and I certainly can't touch the beginning of Lowrider. Yeah, more war, Dave. Number 11. More war. But at least he's happy for the moment. Darn it. And just in terms of from the law nerd department, and we're closing in on the top of the hour and the close of the Pillaropster, if you'd like to get involved and if you've got anything to say, feel free to jump in. Love to hear from you. Of course, that's always the case. This is conversation radio, you know. Oh, thank you, Ralps. Ralps jumped in. Thank you so much, dear. Thank you so very kindly. So we are now down to $805 to go for our community-made miracle to close the month of December in the year 2022. Lee in New York says, Nitwit Nero perp walk. They'll have to go slow if a ramp is part of the travel. Oh, but then think about what he said a few years ago.
And when you're putting him in the cars, don't be so gentle.
Yeah. Hopefully there is a ramp involved, and just maybe take hands off and boom. No, law nerd time. now that the year's coming to a close, the schedule of the Supreme Court, well, it's the holidays, and our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties are taking the holiday season, of course, to mark the birth of their Lord and Savior. Jesus Christ. So they'll get back busy in January. You know, after the holiday season, January is officially coffee breaks over back on your heads time. And this case has the potential to really, really, and this is a complicated legal term, fuck unions. And given the makeup of the court, you can probably guess that this is something down with which people like Brat and the Handmaid and Ann's Boy Neil and Old Balls and Strikes and Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, the de facto Chief Justice of the court, will be. The whole case goes back to 2017 and a Teamsters strike against Glacier Northwest, a cement company. Funny how things that sound relatively boring and banal can actually have such profound consequences. Glacier Northwest Cement Company was, of course, treating its union workers like garbage. And so the Teamsters decided to strike for a new contract, because that's their right under the National Labor Relations Act, passed in 1935. And so the Teamsters struck against Glacier Northwest, and that meant that the drivers got out of their cement trucks and stopped work, because the right of the working class to withhold its labor is about the only power that labor has. And as a consequence of getting out of their trucks, well, the cement hardened in the trucks. This, of course, pissed Glacier Northwest Cement Company right the hell off. And so they, in turn, sued the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. You know, my buddy Rick Smith is a member of the Teamsters Union, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for that organization. But no, Glacier Northwest said, we have a right to recoup our damages from the Teamsters Union, because if they hadn't struck, our cement wouldn't have hardened in the trucks. Of course, there are other legal principles that one might look to for a source here, like the duty of Glacier Northwest to, I don't know, mitigate their own damages. It was probably not a complete surprise, so maybe Glacier Northwest might not have wanted to have a whole bunch of trucks full of wet cement that could then get abandoned. And so, consequently, this could be a really bad case for unions if an employer can assert economic damages and sue the union for causing economic damages by asserting their rights to withhold their labor. A lawyer, a professor by the name of Elizabeth Ford, distinguished practitioner in residence at Seattle University School of Law, said the idea that an employer can sue a union for damages caused by a strike and claim damages money against the union for going on strike would be an incredible deterrent. She went on to say that it's impossible to predict how profound a decision adverse to the Teamsters would be. Noting, it would certainly raise the question with state legislators as to how or whether they have the ability to limit or adjust the kinds of causes of action that an employer might have against a union in the circumstances of a strike. The cost of this kind of litigation for them, relative to their capacity, smaller unions in particular, is much more dramatic than it would be, for example, the Teamsters. And so, come January the 10th, our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties on the court will hear oral arguments in the case. And the sad thing is, we already know what some of the votes are. You've probably got a yes vote from Gorsuch, a yes vote from Bratt, a yes vote from The Handmaid, that's three, a yes vote from Sammy Bad Breath, a yes vote from Pappy. And for all intents and purposes, letting Glacier get away with this would essentially be nullification of the National Labor Relations Act. Oh yeah, sure. You got the right to strike, as long as after the strike's over, you've got the money to pay for whatever economic damages the company claims you caused. I mean, take any strike in living memory, and see how applying a rule like that works out. I mean, in the bad old days of the mine wars here in West Virginia, the coal company would run to a conveniently servile judge and get an injunction against the union for going on strike. But here's the thing. That was before passage of the National Labor Relations Act. And we're talking here about the kinds of Republicans who desperate, and there's a bunch of them on the court, who badly want, you know, led by Fappy Thomas, who want to go back to the bad old days of Lochner. When the court said that the state of New York had no business interfering in the privity of contract between individual bakery workers and the owners of the bakeries. It's potentially a earth-shaking case. Stephen New York noting strike damages. The next logical step is that if a person quits a job and the company can't find a replacement, the company could sue the employee for money damages. Yeah. Yeah. Or blacklisting. Or any of the other things that have been that have supposedly been banned in terms of rotten-ass labor practices over the years. And I cannot emphasize it enough that that is exactly where people like Fappy and Sammy Bad Breath want to go, and they exert a great deal of influence over the youngins on the court. I mean, I wish I had more optimism in terms of hanging my hat on hoping that Gorsuch has some sort of an independent streak emerging in him because of the way he wrote the dissent the other day in regard to Title 42. But considering how he behaved with the Dobbs decision, I don't. Remember the line from the dissent in Dobbs. From the moment of fertilization woman has no rights to speak of. Well, I would like that too, Steve. Steve in New York says, in regard to Nitwit Nero doing a perp walk, I hope they make him wear a mask that says, get your booster on it. That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun. No, says Steve, we should just start calling ourselves proles. No, we should just start calling ourselves serfs. Serfs up, y'all. Road to serfdom. That was a blog back in the day by an Australian blogger, I remember. So, anybody, anybody want to do some conversation? You're more than welcome to. Both lines are open. The stress line, 844-843-4676. And, of course, the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Either one gets you quite easily into the program. Otherwise, we can dig around for more fun frivolity to play with. It really is weird to see this onslaught of relentless political fundraising emails. Yeah, F.A. Hayek wrote a book called, but yeah, he was Austrian. No. There was an Australian who had a blog called Road to Serfdom, and it was S-U-R-F-D-O-M. Oh, and Scott informs us that it is quieter there in the home today. Gotta love those Nerf drumsticks. Really? Was there really some problem solving done there? Oh, and of course, I would be remiss if I did not note two passings of note today. The soccer world. Football, to the rest of the world, everybody but us, is grieving the loss of the man that the world knew as Pele. That was not, of course, his name. I was reading the obituary at the Washington Post earlier today. His real name was Edson Arantes do Nascimento. Forgive me, Flavio. Best I can do. And he said he was born October 23rd, 1940. Passed away today from complications of from cancer at the age of 82. His family called him Dico, D-I-C-O. But all the kids he grew up with called him Pele because he mispronounced the name of his favorite football star, a Brazilian goalie who was known as Bile. But the little guy pronounced it Pele, and of course, the neighborhood kids mocked him relentlessly for it. Long after he had become world famous, at one point in time there was a survey that said that the only entity with a greater favorability rating in Europe was Coca-Cola. But he gave an interview one time, and this struck me as poignant. People said, Pele, 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 all over the world.
But no one remembers Edson. Edson is the person who has the feelings, who has the family, who works hard. Pele is the idol. That was really touching. And somehow or another, I understood a little bit of that. I thought back to how one of my personal heroes, the man that the world knew as Mark Twain, nobody called him Mark. Nobody said, "See here, Twain." The people who knew him and loved him called him by his name. Sam. Samuel Langhorne Clemens. And, of course, the other passing today was Vivian Woodward. A famous British fashion designer. Changed attitudes about, you know what fashion designers do. Both in their 80s. After long and fabulous beloved lives. Going back to the Supreme Court for a moment, Kevin up in Massachusetts notes, "It's time to nullify the Supreme Court in these decisions. Abraham Lincoln did it for the literal survival of this country. This Supreme Court can literally blow up any decent laws regarding everyday life. And didn't Andrew Jackson stiff the Supreme Court as well? Yes, he did. When Andrew Jackson got his genocide on and had the Congress pass the Indian Removal Act. And by the way, that was what got David Crockett bounced out of the Congress. He was a frontier folk hero in real time. But he recognized how utterly evil the Indian Removal Act was, and being from Tennessee, when he announced his opposition, Andrew Jackson went about the business of ruining him. And that's why he took his leave, heading at first for the area of West Tennessee known as the Shakes, and then declaring, "You all may go to hell. I will go to Texas." But yeah, Andrew Jackson said, "Justice Marshall has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it." And that, and Kevin, that may be where we're headed. At the beginning of the program, we had this Ashley Gillard, thumbing her nose at the judicial system, even though she has already been sued in defamation. Professor Schofield was not a public figure, so the higher standards for public figures in cases of defamation will not apply to her, or should not apply. And Ashley Gillard, by her own statements, appears to be acting out of actual malice, even though Professor Schofield won't have to prove that. But apparently she knows enough to know that judgment proof means judgment proof. We may be looking at the collapse of the legal system simply because it only works if everybody believes in it. It's Tinkerbell. You're not clapping, Tinkerbell's dying. Oh, and this is becoming a daily feature. More George Santos lies are emerging. over at CNN, their K-File has dug up more of his fantasies and falsehoods. Among other things, K-File found out that he claimed he had to leave a New York City private school when his family's real estate business took a plunge. He also went on to say that, well, I represented Goldman Sachs at a top financial conference. And at the financial conference that he berated Goldman Sachs for investing in renewables. Meanwhile, CNN also contacted genealogists who checked into his claim that his mother's family's historical Jewish name was Zabrowski. Genealogists get really, really nerdy, and they dig really deeply. And they could not find any Jewish or Ukrainian heritage on even the spindliest branch of his family tree. Of course, he also said his mother was a white immigrant from Belgium. His mother's family was in Brazil since the late 1800s. Supposedly, he went to the elite Horace Mann private school in the Bronx. In 2019, his bio for his first campaign for Congress said, he began Horace Mann Preparatory School in the Bronx, however, did not graduate from Horace Mann due to financial difficulties for his family. He obtained a GED during his senior year. And then he doubled down on it on YouTube in 2020. And they sent me to a good prep school, which was Horace Mann Prep in the Bronx. And in my senior year of prep school, unfortunately, my parents fell on hard times, which was something that would later become known as the Depression of 2008. Yes, the Obama Depression of 2008. I know. Shh, don't tell me. But we were hit a little earlier on with the over-leveraging of real estate, and the market started to implode, and the first thing to go was the prep school. You know, you can't afford a $2,500 tuition at that point, right? So, anyway, I left school 4 months to graduation. Well, it's not that hard to get hold of the folks at Horace Mann Prep School in the Bronx, where Ed Adler, a spokesman, told CNN, we've searched the records and there is no evidence that George Santos or any alias attended Horace Mann. You know, at this point in time, we're reaching pathological liar status, aren't we? I mean, should we stop referring to him as George Santos and just start calling him who he is, Joey Zuzu? Has anybody made the Joey Zuzu comparison yet? He's lying. Or what was the character from Saturday Night Live? And was it Joe Piscopo who played him? Yeah, Morgan Fairchild. No, it was not. No, it was John Lovitz. Yeah, that's the ticket. Morgan Fairchild. Yeah, then there was the podcast story that he told this past summer. Have you ever heard of a Goldman Sachs employee take the stage at the largest private equity conference in the world, SALT, run by Anthony Scaramucci, and berate their employer? Well, I did that, and I did it in the fashion of renewable energy and global warming. This was the panel I was on, and they're all talking about solar, wind, and this was back, what, 7 years ago now? And I said, you know what? This is a scam. It's taxpayer money that gets subsidized. Both Goldman Sachs and Anthony Scaramucci, who runs the conference, said, yeah, he never worked there and he wasn't there. Horace Mann, $2,500, Steve writes. I knew someone who went there, and its cost is way more along the lines of $50,000 a year. Oh, but that was, you know, that was 2008 during the Obama Depression. Money was smaller back then, Steve. What? Ralph's what? Ralph's asking, have you talked about George Santos being black? Oh, no. Is George Santos the Rachel Dolezal of late 2021? And of course, you know, because he had to establish his Republican bona fides back in December 2020, because all of a sudden now there's a market for finding the latest George Santos lies. I saw George Zimmerman. No. What? No. George Eastman. Sorry. George Zimmerman murdered Trayvon Martin. I saw George Eastman interviewed earlier today, and he said, we knew these things. We knew some of these things. And we kept trying to get the local media to bite, but they weren't open to it. Everybody figured there was no way that Santos could win, so they just kind of let it blow by. Eastman said, you know, they had some low-level interest from, like, the New York Daily News. But nothing really got legs. But anyway, in December 2020, he said, my father fled socialism in Brazil. My mother fled socialism in Europe, and they came here, and they built a family. And today they can be proud to have a son who is a well-accomplished businessman who is now running for United States Congress. That's something that wasn't in the cards for my family. And he also said, I grew up with a white Caucasian mother, an immigrant from Belgium. The only problem is that his mother was born in Brazil and her family had been there again since the 1800s, which for even the mathematically challenged like me, is pretty obviously more than 100 years. And then there's Zabrowski. Jesus, this guy. Yeah, Zabrowski. He said, on a Fox News digital show about 10 months back. He said his maternal grandparents, you know, the Belgians, changed their Jewish last name from Zabrowski. We don't carry the Ukrainian last name. For a lot of people who are descendants of World War II refugees and survivors of the Holocaust, a lot of names and paperwork were changed in the name of survival. So I don't carry the family last name that would have been Zabrowski. I carry my mother's maiden name, which is the Dutch side of the family. Well, enter Megan Smoleniak, a genealogist, as aforementioned, who told CNN, there's no sign of Jewish and or Ukrainian heritage and no indication of name changes along the way. At this point, wouldn't it be just as well to, I don't know, scam some DNA from him and send it off to 23andMe and just find out, I don't know, that he's the great-grandchild of the Lindbergh baby. Tune in tomorrow to find out what else George Santos has lied about. And yet, says Ron in Raleigh, Kevin McCarthy will still swear in this lying swine. Oh, by the way, Psycho BB was sworn in today. A word or two would be welcome. Oh, yeah. At this point in time, it seems like Israel is going full on fascist. This is being written up by even the most neutral or some of the most fawning outlets as the most hardcore right-wing government in Israeli history. And among other things, one of the things that has been noted with some degree of pride, I use that term intentionally, Israel has been praised for being a most accepting country for the LGBTQ community. Even the T part. Well, that's probably not going to last much longer because with this right-wing government in place there, there are already bills being introduced by the hardcore, weirdo, ultra-religious right to give more rights to the ultra-hardcore orthodox weirdos and to defund things like Pride in Tel Aviv and eventually to criminalize being LGBTQQIA+ at all. Making Israel thereby more like Saudi Arabia. I've said it a million times if I've said it once. It's not the flavor of the fundamentalism. It's the fundamentalism itself. I don't care if it's Christian fundamentalism, Muslim fundamentalism, or Jewish fundamentalism, Hindu fundamentalism, Sikh fundamentalism, Jain fundamentalism, Shinto fundamentalism, Buddhist fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is toxic to the point of deadly. Well, yeah, hey, Cam. I think you're right. Your Santos voice sure sounds a lot like Bugs Bunny. Kim noting, I grew up in Great Neck, Long Island, which is located in Santos's district, I'm embarrassed to admit. And as someone with the social and cultural and geographic knowledge, Kim, was it really that unlikely that he would win the election against Eastman? I mean, how thick is the maggot impulse in that district? It must be fairly thick now. Or maybe they just bought into all the... Because what he was trying to do is he was trying to check all boxes. He was trying to do that St. Paul thing, you know, behold, I am all things to all people. What? You Jewish? Me? I'm Jewish. Yeah, my mama was a Ukrainian Belgian with Dutch ancestry who was born in Brazil. Kind of makes your eyes roll back in your head, doesn't it? And a note coming in from Scary Jerry, George Santos, he was born the son of poor black Mississippi sharecroppers. I take full cowbell credit for not really being gay. Lie. He lies worse than Trump. Every time they say George Soros, we say George Santos. Okay, yeah. You know what? It just occurred to me, Jerry. Maybe he's one of these weirdos like Nick Fuentes who says that the gayest thing in the world is for a guy to have sex with a woman. because that's a real thing in the, and I guess I knew it already, but I learned a new word today. The manosphere. God, I laughed so hard earlier. We talked last night about Andy Tate getting stone cold owned by Greta Thunberg. It was a beautiful moment. A tweeter by the name of JoJo from Jurors said, "Yes, Andrew Tate may own 33 gas-guzzling cars, but Greta Thunberg now owns one Andrew Tate." To which I added in conversing with our pal Joy, "I mean, she owns an urn filled with Andrew Tate's ashes." The manosphere is a really weird place. And this thing has shown itself to have some legs. And he just keeps getting burned. In fact, it got buried in the thread, but he actually responded. He actually responded to Greta Thunberg saying, "How dare you?" Yes, do. Send me the information at smalldickenergy@getalife.com. Oh, and we had the NRA roulette wheel o' death stopped at the Mall of America today in a horrifying incident. Well, it's the NRA roulette wheel of death, so necessarily it's going to be horrifying. Two minors and one adult have all been charged with a shooting at Mall of America. It's the largest shopping center in the U.S. It amazes me that I guess it's the only mall that didn't die. The Hennepin County District Court spokesman Matt Lehman broke the news. Tayshawn Adams Wright is facing charges of second-degree murder with intent and second-degree assault with a dangerous weapon because he is alleged to have been involved in the shooting. And then the two minors are charged with aiding and abetting second-degree felony riot armed with a dangerous weapon. Bloomington, Minnesota Police Chief Booker Hodges said, "We don't know why this happened. And we don't know the why because people flat out are just not cooperating and people don't want to talk." Gunshots rang out on the first floor of Nordstrom in Mall of America just before 8 o'clock. I guess it was last Friday. And then they found the body of Jonte Raymond Hudson of St. Paul, dead from multiple gunshot wounds. And 5 months ago, there was more gunplay at a crowded store there at Mall of America. Jesus. Well, no, I'm sorry. Freedom! Freedom! Oh, and yes, thank you for that, Roger. I had seen that, but I didn't see all the details. Andy Tate now has, as Roger put it, his ass in a ringer in Romania, He went to Romania specifically because, he said, Romania has lax laws relating to sexual assault, and he wanted to be able to do whatever he wanted to do. Police descended on a villa Andrew Tate and brother Tristan were staying at Thursday to detain the two dude bros on charges of kidnapping and rape. They allegedly detained two young women, one of whom had American citizenship and one Romanian, back in April in the villa against their will. They were subjected to physical violence and mental coercion. Behold the manosphere. Police even think that the Tate boys formed an organized crime gang that forced women to perform pornographic demonstrations for production and dissemination through social media platforms. They were questioned for hours back in April, but taken in the last day or two. I sure hope it doesn't hurt too little. And they were two young girls. Young. Because, see, in the manosphere, they preach that you have to get girls young so that they won't be, and I know this is disgusting to talk about, run through, and so that their vaginas will not have been turned into what these freaks refer to as roasties. Because there's an entire encyclopedia of wrong, toxic, misogynistic information that goes with being a member of the manosphere. For instance, a woman who has sex with, say, 10 different guys is ruined, but if she has sex with one guy 10 times, she's good. Meanwhile, a guy who has sex with 10 women is just manly. Meanwhile, Andy Tate tried to respond with a video to the burn down he received from Greta Thunberg by making fun of pronouns and calling her a slave of the matrix. And the genius asked to be handed a couple of boxes of pizza, which just happened to disclose the fact that it was from a pizza joint somewhere in Romania, letting Romanian officials know that he was, in fact, in country. You got to have a fairly strong stomach if you want to really understand the workings of these sick, sick men of the manosphere. Arnold in PA is familiar with Andrew Tate. He should fuck himself. I'm a man's man, Arnold said, but he's a CIA plant. His dad was CIA. Part of what makes him appealing in some of the guy stuff is true, but it's not all of it, and I'm far too sensitive to have any patience for most of it. Well, the primary things that they preach, and you can see it every day, all day, every day, and if you pay really close attention to the postings, you see a lot of, say, sketchy syntax and grammar that suggest posts coming from places other than, traditional English-speaking countries. And I'm convinced at this point that what happened here is that people like Lobster Daddy Jordan Peterson and Pink Shrek Joe Rogaine and Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby Benny Shapiro created, and you know, the Andrew Tates and you know, God, there's so many of them. They're so gross. They've created a sort of rift and misogynistic patriarchal cultures, you know, barbarians, places like Saudi Arabia, some portions of India, they're trying to drive a further wedge, so that because they dream of one day imposing a sort of fascistic hyper-masculinity on the entire world and put every woman in on the planet in a goddamn beekeeper suit. It's disgusting. Let me check in real quick. Hey, Kim. To answer your question, Robin, highly likely that they would have elected Santos. When I lived in Great Neck many, many years ago, it was called Red, but not because it was MAGA, but because it was very progressive, mostly inhabited by very progressive Jews. Since then, it has been infiltrated by ultra-religious Jews and now does lean MAGA. Very sad. Oh. Yeah, there's red and then there's red, isn't there? Well, thank you. Thank you for the information and helping us all be a little bit more geographically and culturally and socially literate about at least a portion of Long Island. Let's run over to the stress line, see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, I hope it gets better. Is that you, Arnold? Arnold, do we have a... I think we've got a terrible connection. You want to try again? I don't know what you said. Okay, maybe we're going to try again. I think Arnold said he did I hear him right? He's going to go outside and try. And I had no idea until I heard it on MSNBC this morning. I just haven't been paying that much attention to the Nazi Pope. You know, Pope Benedict! The anti-aircraft... Arnold, any better?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
It's some better, but not much.
Another night. I wanted to rant about Andrew, but I'll let it go for now.
Well, I heard the word rant. I would love to let you rant. I don't know. We've got to find somewhere where your signal is better.
I'll try again.
Okay. Right. Okay. No, I didn't know. Alex Witt was filling in for, I guess, I forget who does the 10 o'clock slot on MSNBC, but he said, you know, Pope Benny the Rat is sick, and the people all over the world are praying for Benny the Rat. And then added, apparently off the cuff, and I'm sure those prayers are making him feel so much better. Honey, he's 1,000 years old. And he's also, you know, an ex-Nazi. I really hope this is working now, Arnold. Let me give you a different number. Let me text it to you.
All right. Text it to me. I usually call from Arthur.
Well, I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why it's as bad as it is.
You sound much better on this one. The last one was terrible for sure, but
Well, you're getting better, but you still sound a bit like a robot. I'm wondering if maybe it comes through on another line, maybe it's my phone. But I just texted you the number, so give it a try, okay?
Okay, we'll do. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
But I didn't know. He's 95 years old. Benny the Rat is. He is said to be seriously ill, so the new year will probably begin with a dead Pope orgy. And people are to follow this kind of thing are like, well, I don't know how we're going to do this. Because usually, you know, because he was a Pope Emeritus or whatever. And they've never had a Pope, a sitting Pope preside over the funeral of another Pope. And do they have to have, they don't have to have a conclave or, oh my God. I hope it's not as involved as that of, say, the coin. Crossing my fingers here. Is it any better, Arnold?
Well, let's see. How about now?
Yes! Yes!
Yay! All right.
So nice to talk to you. It's been so long.
It's been a while. I think the last time was probably Netroots.
Yeah. I don't think we have talked since Netroots.
And then you guys had fell off of Alexa for a few weeks, and that's been my default way to listen. And so I was diligent, and I checked all the time. And then one night, a couple weeks ago, within a week and a half or so ago, it was magically fixed. So
I got nothing. I mean, we do the program, we upload it, we send it. Were you able to listen to it live on Alexa?
Yeah. Now we can. I was using my cell phone when it wouldn't work on Alexa, but now it's back to working on Alexa. It comes up as the Head On Radio Network.
Wow.
And I don't even like Alexa, but someone got them for us, and they're kind of handy, I guess.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. You may not want it, but then you start using it, and you realize, this is convenient.
Yeah. So my main call was, I'm like other people that call. I enjoy the other people texting and calling, and I like to participate by listening, but when it comes to these Tate brothers, something is not right with the amount of publicity that they have. I know that they claim that they don't own their own social media accounts. Those are people in their little bot network that actually produce these videos, and so that's why they're on Instagram and TikTok and they're all these places. In these colder months, I do a lot of media consumption. Stuff I shouldn't watch because it's too cold outside to do other things. And, you know, typical.
I get it.
Anyway, I was trying to say something rude about myself, but I just couldn't do it. So my point about them, both Andrew and his brother Christian or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Tristan.
They, again, like the text that you read from me, their part of their appeal is some guy bravado stuff that on its face isn't the worst advice if you're a guy and you're lost. The problem with that is all the other shit that satellites around everything that they talk about. And the more that I see them randomly places, the absolute more just disrespect for women is evident. So they're allowed, and you said...
Well, I think, Arnold, I don't necessarily disagree, but I think it extends much further than disrespect for women. It is open hostility and hatred of. I mean, that's the very definition of misogyny. And these guys are stone-cold misogynists.
Part of what's irking me now, you mentioned the guy from Canada who's like...
Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, him. So his daughter allegedly runs his business and was recently with Andrew. You know, Andrew flew her across the world to have a day meeting. And so many of the videos that I saw, and again, not looking, and this is the weird thing about why I watch a lot of car videos. So I don't really do, I'm not really like, I don't look at porn. I'm not anti-porn. I just, that's not my thing. And I do a lot, I look up a lot of car parts and a lot of like history. And so I don't look up necessarily things I would think that would bring me Andrew Tate or Jordan Peterson. But I get a lot of stuff in my reels from both of these jerks. And Peterson's another scary bastard because...
Oh, he's a stone-cold fascist.
His concept is basically breaking us down to sort of like what Germany does by the time you're 8, where they know what you're going to do with the rest of your life based on the way your mind works. He's got that same kind of mentality. Like, he wants you to analyze yourself to the point where you're purely a number, get in the box where you fit, and fucking stay there. And he's real scary.
Well, you do know he's gone so far as to suggest that we should order society on a model of how, and I'm not kidding, lobsters order their groupings.
Oh, really?
Lobsters.
Does he know something I don't about that? You know, what's going on there?
It's all tied up in this these horseshit notions of masculinity.
So let me ask you...
Masculine dominance. I mean, ask away.
Where does he come from?
Oh, he's like a PhD psychologist from a university in Canada. And he started writing self-help books, but the self-help books sort of transformed into these decline of the West, racist, homophobic, transphobic the tropes. You know, he talks a lot about the West, okay? And yet somehow the West winds up only being white, majority white countries. For instance, Canada is a part of the West, but Brazil isn't.
Interesting.
The UK is a part of the West, but Peru isn't.
So this isn't new. This is several hundred year old, white assholedom. I mean, not to be ignorant, but I mean, not really, right? If the southern hemisphere doesn't exist,
well, I mean, Mexico's not part of the West either, and they're in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah, that's true, actually, isn't it? All of Central America, huh?
Yeah.
Look at that. Shit.
And you know, you can do the same in Europe. The West is, by definition, you know,
Italy, not Africa.
It's not even necessarily, you know, Russia. It's a very narrowly defined. And the thing is, the West doesn't even exist, okay? Because, you know, we're talking about, they love to go back and talk about, for instance, you know, the ancient Greek philosophers, who had no concept of the West. You know, Greeks famously divided the world into Greeks and the barbars. From whence, because the ancient Greeks thought, where we get the word barbarian from, Arnold, is the ancient Greeks listened to other languages and thought everybody else was just walking around saying bar, 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 bar.
That's funny.
Yeah, when they were the guardians. But the funny thing is, other countries looked at the Greeks and thought that they were freaks.
Yep.
The ancient Persians thought that they were absolutely stone cold fucking hillbillies.
With people like Peterson and with the Tates, and you mentioned Shapiro, which I thought was sort of funny. It's sad to group him in with that same group because he's clearly not as smart. He thinks he is. If you ask,
well, he thinks Shapiro, if he can talk really fast, that you'll think he's smart because he's talking really fast.
Yeah, he's just got a good connection for meth.
Earned it.
The cheap shot, but thank you for the cowbell. So, appreciate it. So, when it comes to him, I find it funny because he is he's very serious about his religion and, you know, his diet and his family. And, you know, he is the perfect little Jew boy, not to be rude. But everybody else should be a crazed white fascist, and that's okay. He has to be adhere to his diet, adhere to his calendar, adhere to all his rules. But everybody else should be a whack job crazy person, because if you listen to him not talk about himself but talk about the direction that the rest of us should be in, he wants a pretty crazy world. He's an evil little dude.
Yeah, he's a fascist. He is what would have been recognized in, say, 1939 Europe as a capo or a Sonderkommando. He is a Jewish collaborator with fascists.
And why
I want to go back to one thing you said. You said it's a shame to, or it's odd to lump him in with Peterson and Joe Rogan and Andrew Tate and that lot. You can find videos of Jordan Peterson and probably Matt Walsh and Joe Rogan and Benny Shapiro all sitting around yucking it up. While they're just going over the list of people that they hate who should probably be sent off to the camps.
Yep. Now, Rogan, I've been trying not to talk about on purpose because he was overpaid and underqualified. But beyond that is another pseudo-intellectual, not to say that he's not smart. I'm sure he, you know, if we went point for point, he probably knows more about the world than I do, and that's fine. But as an observer of him, with the platform that he has, he should be a little bit more careful about who he has on, and then on top of who he has on, how he engages.
But he doesn't give a shit, okay? He can, you know, he's the king of jacking off. You know, just asking questions. He's a jack-off. But the questions he asks always wind up leading to predetermined conclusions that wind up being hateful right-wing horseshit.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
I mean, it is fun. I saw a clip of Miley Cyrus absolutely owning his ass.
Really?
Yeah. He said something, I forget what they were talking about. He said, yeah, I see that, and it's just like the same thing over and over again. And she said, yeah, it's just the same as I feel like when I'm watching you. And Neil deGrasse Tyson absolutely destroyed Benny Shapiro and maybe Joe Rogan, too. Because
I saw Tyson on Rogan. I don't remember any clips from there being exciting. It was pretty boring.
They tried to go down the pronoun rabbit hole, and Neil deGrasse Tyson just had him for lunch and picked his teeth with their little bones and laid them over on the plate. Because that's the thing. The jack-offs cannot actually operate in the same space as genuine intellectuals. You know, Jordan Peterson is not a genuine intellectual. He's a psychologist who writes self-help books. He's Tony Robbins with a PhD, okay? Remember Tony Robbins?
He's like a doctor. He's like a Dr. Phil. Another Dr. Phil.
Yeah. Yeah. He's Dr. Phil, but occasionally ends his sentences with a.
Yeah. And he wants you to, he's another person who wants you to believe he's mega rich. Like that's the, like his air is I'm more wealthy than you could ever be.
Right. And of course that's part and parcel of this sort of neo-Calvinist impulse where if you're rich, it means you're doing everything right and God likes you. And if you're poor, it's just because you're supposed to be and you're stupid and probably the wrong skin color.
You know, I'm going to say something that is going to sound like horse shit, but I have to get this out because I've lived it. You could have literal negative money, you know, like no money, owe the bank money, no cash, nothing. Or you could be very flush, had things, everything okay, just okay, everything's great. And in this country, you're still poor. Now, the person with no money is obviously very poor at the moment, effed, if you will. But the person who has everything figured out and seems to be okay, they are still grossly poor.
Yes.
Now, they're in two different modes at the moment. Both of those people don't recognize each other. I get that. But when it comes to the rich looking down on the rest of us, we all don't matter to them.
Right.
And that's something that...
And that's the attitude, Arnold, that's the attitude that goes behind the notion that you've got people who don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, and they'll still vote for Trump. Because they engage in this magical thinking, this fallacy that,
well, someday, you know, they believe in tax cuts for the rich because someday they might be rich too and they might want to have tax cuts.
What was it? We're all dispossessed millionaires?
Temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
Yeah, that's the one. I love that one. And, you know, it's true. I mean, so many people behave in that mode. I mean, even like when you do the parent pickup at school, when you see all the variety of cars and what people choose to, you know, they have to parade themselves through the parking lot with is kind of comical.
Yeah, and, you know, my parents came from the Depression, Arnold. I mean, they literally, you know, became teenagers in the Depression.
Right.
And so they were terrified of debt. They hated it. My parents paid off our little three-bedroom ranch-style house that I grew up in. And every now and then they'd go driving around in one of the new subdivisions and, you know, say, you know, we could probably buy one. They had excellent credit. They could have bought anything they wanted.
Right.
We could probably buy one of these. Might be nice to live out here. And I'm sitting in the back seat of the car going, please, 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 please. Yeah, I just wanted a basement and I wanted a pool table. I know.
Right.
Don't ask.
No. I listen, everybody.
And you know, and a swimming pool to drown in the backyard, right?
Perfect. And
but they were, but they, but they were,
my neighbor.
They were terrified of the debt.
My neighbor had two daughters. Yeah.
I was just going to say they were terrified of the new debt. Of debt, so they never did that for themselves. And so with that having been said, you know, whenever it would be the, you know, look at that car, look who's driving what, they'd say, well, you know, they're just in debt.
Right.
And that was like saying, well, you know, they don't wash their hands after they shit. It was said in the same way.
It's funny that you mention it that way because I have relatives. My dad is very much an anti-debt person, you know, believes in it for certain things, but basically there's no valid reason really. And his parents were Depression era, and that's exactly where that comes from. That's how they were.
And what they fundamentally didn't understand, my parents or maybe this guy's parents, is that the rich live on debt. And they understand you can get rich with debt.
This is what I was actually going to make that. I was going to draw that connection to talking about Tate and Peterson. And there's several other people that continuously pop up in that same selection of people. And it's all about managing debt. It's all about getting people hooked into this, you know, you should be a real estate tycoon. You know, blah, blah, you know, go down the list of crazy things you should spend money on that is debt. And like, I'm not a tax expert, but apparently you can borrow money and not spend money, the rich can do all these ways of hiding income. And it's totally insane. It's all paperwork. And it seems illegal when you start listening to it. Like, it seems like, why would you go through any of that shit?
But there was a book written, and I'm trying to remember his name. I've actually met him and had conversations with him. But he wrote a book 20 years ago called Perfectly Legal, maybe even longer than 20 years ago. And it David K. Johnston. And it was an examination.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an examination of these schemes by which the wealth class manages to evade taxation. Well, the difference being tax evasion is illegal. Tax avoidance is not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you wind up with things, because Some of these loopholes were at least partially closed, but for instance, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which does some philanthropic things, the rich exploited a loophole whereby they put all their wealth in these foundations, and suddenly they were essentially tax-free individuals.
Sure.
And you're right. It looks like it ought to be illegal as hell, but the title of David K. Johnston's book was perfectly legal. And that's why people, and that's why lawyers bust their asses to get into, say, the NYU LLM program for, you know, lawyers in taxation. Because, as Kurt Vonnegut observed, if you're close to the filthy rich and you just get to dip your finger in the stream every now and then, you too can be filthy rich. And none of these, none of this wealth is derived from, say, people who make lives infinitely better. You know, these are not the people who invent things. Napoleon Bonaparte was born on third, thinking he'd hit a triple. Yeah, that's what they used to say about George W. Bush. None of this money came from actually doing, you know. It's not a welder, okay? It's not. They're not plumbers. You know, they're not people who can save your ass when your furnace goes out in 10 below. They don't. They're actually, if you want to use the beehive analogy, they're drones. They just sit around and consume, in the hopes that one day they'll get to reproduce. Sorry, I didn't mean to take you away from your original thesis, Arnold.
What's crazy is how much it correlates, because one of the things about Andrew that got me mad enough to call and just wanted to rant about how disgusting they are is his father was in the CIA. He admits that in one of the interviews that I've seen. And I'm convinced that he is one of those people that's allowed to operate at the level that he's allowed to operate at, to make people have these kind of conversations and indoctrinate a shit ton of men to be assholes and to brainwash a bunch of
right.
Women.
And let me just add here. We're not talking about indoctrinating men. You know, Andrew Tate is what an 11-year-old boy thinks a macho guy is.
Yeah. See, I don't think about this stuff as much as I probably should, but if you break everything down to high school, because it basically is, a guy like him, before he was the boxer that he, you know, is now.
Claims to be.
A guy like him in high school, or used to be, a person like me, a disabled misfit, I would have kicked his ass, because he would have picked on me in front of girls to humiliate me to make himself look better, and I would have kicked the shit out of him. That was what life lesson he would have learned in high school. And so when I see somebody like him now as a fighter, or like you said, former fighter, it's kind of funny, because you know what he was in high school. He was someone that was picked on and bullied around, and the fighting is a direct reflection of needing to fight back, push back, kick back. And the more confident you are, the less likely you are to always have to participate in mock war. You know, whether it's football or wrestling or, you know, boxing or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's all cover. I mean, if you do go and look at the way they talk amongst, I mean, you should have seen the. Let me see if I can find it real quick. After he got burnt to the ground by Greta Thunberg. Well, there was actually a response. The manosphere responded, and of course they patted him on the back. Oh, you really got her, man. And their reasoning for this is absolutely sickening. I'm trying to find the particular piece of dialogue.
Yeah, so his first business that he admits to was selling like sexy webcam stuff. So he hired a bunch of women or assembled the opportunity for a bunch of women to sell their bits on the internet. And that was the first business that he claims in some of the interviews that I've seen. And the thing that I find the most fascinating about all of this is, again, what I search is basically car parts, videos about cars, car accidents. So I'm household, you know, stuff. I'm not looking for these types of videos. That's why I don't trust. That's why I don't trust it so much. It's almost like it's advertising. It's not coming through as advertising, but it's almost.
No, it's because the algorithms are so screwily contrived. For instance, I'm a big fan of Natalie Wynn. She's known as ContraPoints on YouTube. Love her work.
Okay.
Well, she's got a subreddit, ContraPoints subreddit. The algorithm at subreddit will show me and say, it'll show me a comment from the Jordan Peterson subreddit and say, because you like ContraPoints, we're giving you. They are at complete opposite ends of the spectrum, but the algorithm just thinks that they're similar.
It's contrary. All it can figure out is it's contrary, so it must work.
Yeah. And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa reminds us, by the way, Andrew Tate bills himself as the most famous man in the world, true story. And Jordan Pederast is a Catholic. A Catholic.
Is he? He's Catholic?
Yeah. And yet, and if you, oh God, his Twitter feed is, he tweets about having dreams of having sex with his grandmother.
Well, that's even more twisted because I could totally see him as a laid over altar boy. That's part of where the misguided rage comes from. I'm pretty sure.
Well, a lot of these
men really was that too cheap of a shot for me?
No. The fact of the matter is, these you, these the more you read of this stuff. The more you become convinced that it's like they hate women, they despise women. Why don't you manosphere guys just go fuck each other and get it over with? So what
well,
I was going to respond. I finally found the response thread. So. Okay. Andrew Tate, which is a great name, Andy Tate, responding to people saying, you know, you just need to fuck her and get it over with. And Andy Tate replied, she ain't ready. And another guy replies, just give her a proper smashing and she'll knock it off with her crazy feminist climate nonsense. And then another one jumps in and says, sometimes the D is all they need. And another guy says, the majority of the time. And it's hard not to read this and go, I don't think you've ever been in the same area code with a woman.
You know, wow.
I know. It is sickening.
You can't have, because women don't even, I'm not going to tell you, but women don't even like total simp men, you know, no one's getting wet over some total wimp, okay? But there is this concept that all men have to do with sex is show up. And I don't know what the fuck. I don't know who they've had sex with, maybe themselves.
No one?
It's like, that's not how the party works. Like, if you want to have really good sex, You have to be a participant. You have to care about your partner or partners or whatever's going on. You have to be aware of your surroundings. And when people talk like that, like, you know, just banging somebody is going to somehow fix their mind, it's so insane. Because
But they've been taught that, and they've internalized it. And you haven't even lived, Arnold. You have not lived until you have seen these manosphere types talking about women's anatomy. One of the current obsessions is,
all you got to do is give her a cervical orgasm, dude, and she'll be yours for life.
They actually fantasize about having such violent sex that they are impacting a woman's cervix. And I guess there's some data that suggests maybe some tiny percentage of women enjoy it, but like 99.9% of women find it, for instance, they'll say, I remember the day I got my IUD, because the doctor has to open the cervix and put the IUD in.
Yeah, one of the girls I dated recently was talking to me about the that hurts, and that's like one of those personal things where it hurts some women more than others, like, you know, typical anatomy thing. But what the thing?
But you can't. But you cannot convince an incel or a manosphere guy that it's not pleasurable.
And they've never had, they've never made love or had sex with a real woman.
Right.
Any variation, because every woman I've ever personally been with does not like that. I can't remember anybody liking it. It's always been like, got to change the angle, got to do this, got to do that. Don't do that again. I don't like that. You bumped me, whatever. Like, you know, stuff happens in the heat of the moment, fine. But like, if it's continuous, like, nobody wants that. Like, you know,
or if it's some sort of sexual holy grail that one of these creeps has picked up, you know, along the, and but the you know, the larger issue here, and I'm not trying to get
big enough.
Yeah, I'm not trying to get too far into the weeds. It's really fun when you point out to one of these little assholes that the Matrix, because they're all about the red pill and the blue pill, right?
Yep.
Well, it's really fun when you point out to one of these little incels that The Matrix is the original movie, The Matrix, is one great big trans allegory.
Is it?
Yes, it absolutely is. The Wachowski sisters, who used to be the Wachowski brothers, have said so straight up. And the reason it's red pill versus blue pill is, back years ago, there was and this is a little bit of a chemistry pharmacology thing. Estrogens now are done as naturally derived bioidentical estradiol, okay? But back in the day, there was something called Premarin. And Premarin was a conjugated estrogen, and it proved to be very, very dangerous because it tended to cause deep vein thrombosis. Hardly ever used anymore. It was derived, it's called Premarin, it's derived from pregnant mare urine.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in its heyday, it was a red pill. And so these incels told me, you know, man, I took the red pill. Really? You're on Premarin? Really, hon?
That's funny.
And then there's a clip, since we're into this now. There's a clip from The Matrix itself, and it's Morpheus talking to Neo. Let me see if I can. There it is. Morpheus is explaining to Neo why Neo has always felt kinda bubble off plum. And again, because the creators of the movie were trans women, everybody else watched this movie and went, yeah, and just took it in as part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this clip And imagine you're the Wachowski sisters trying to tell a story about being closeted and trans and getting a wider audience to understand it even if they didn't know. This is good.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Matrix.
Yeah, kid, the Matrix.
You know,
and when he says, "Do you know what I'm talking about?" That's an opportunity for the audience to say, "Oh," but actually understand what they're trying to tell the world about their experience without having to beat them over the head with it.
You have to be aware of this. And I'm probably remembering it a little bit more similar than it is. But you've actually spoken about, your transition, you've used a version of, just in telling your tale, a version of what, that's crazy. I didn't, you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I do. And
I mean, that's just wild, because it's what you said before you played it, right? Whether or not people realize what they were talking about, it's literally right there. And then once you look at it, like you said, how to view it, when you play it, it makes perfect sense. And it's like something that you have said. It's kind of wild. I mean, it's more than kind of wild. It's wild. And it's funny that we went here, because originally I called in for why I called in. But this was the question I originally wanted to ask you, was why is all this stuff all over the place? Is this because Limbaugh's dead and we need new assholes around? Or is this serving a Russian audience and we're getting spillover here? Like, what's the...
Well, I think I have an answer, Arnold, and I alluded to it earlier. Russia is part of it, and I'm not going to do my Alex Jones voice because this is not paranoia.
Okay.
Vladdy Daddy consolidated power in Russia by getting in bed with the Russian Orthodox Church, which is horribly, horribly, horribly LGBTQ phobic. Okay.
Okay.
That's why one of the worst things in the world to be is LGBTQ and in Russia at the same time.
Okay.
They're still passing laws calling them deviants. And they're still murdering them and getting away with it. And so in order to consolidate his power, Putin had to come up with this muscular Russian masculinity. And they started pumping it out into the wider world, you know, via their troll farms and whatnot. And sure. I have read enough of these exchanges that I can spot the stilted English from a mile away. Most people don't pay attention to it, Arnold. I do.
Okay.
It's an English that you immediately recognize is not an English as used by someone for whom it is their first language. This is not me criticizing English as a second language. This is me saying that this is a tell, just like sitting at a poker table. And without fail, it's this hypermasculinity, it's this vicious misunderstanding of female anatomy. And it is a level of misogyny that's absolutely, well, shocking when you, and then you go, wow, this is all over the place. And so, in a capitalist economy, when people are dedicated to capitalism, everything is an opportunity to make a buck. And so Jordan Peterson saw an opening to make a buck. Because, you know, if you remember as far back as the late 90s and stuff, I remember when they were talking about, you know, well, Bill Clinton wears bronzing powder. Well, okay. But that, you know, that drove the Bubbas halfway around the bend.
Yep.
And then you get terms like metrosexual.
Yep, I remember that.
And then as rights in the LGBTQ community expand, these people who are inclined to see everything as a zero-sum game think that somehow if people are able to live their lives happily and out in society, that somehow or another they are less able to do so. So you'll see a lot of complaints, for instance, about how it's no longer acceptable to be manly. And you'll see complaints that there was a thing that you were, you know, well, if all the men in the world went away for a day, women, all the women in the world would be dead in two. Because they can't pave no roads, they can't dig no ditches, they can't construct no skyscrapers.
You do that accent pretty well. I'm surprised.
I mean, it comes naturally to me.
So I'm in Napa.
So do you.
And all those types of, you know, redneck places all the time. And I can tell you that masculinity is not dead. There's plenty of, like, dudes running around in Carhartts with boots, like, fixing stuff and being assholes all over the place. Like, there's plenty of that still going on. I don't think that's been impeded anywhere, at least not in the hell, part of hell I live in.
No, nor here.
So, I mean, I don't know what, when it comes to that, I don't know what they're talking about. I mean, men are allowed to be men. I think what the problem is men have to let other people coexist.
Right, and hopefully we've made enough. You know, what this is, it's all reactionaryism. It's reactionism toward people saying, hey, I've got a right not to be scared to death walking down the street by myself,
yep.
Or you know, just because of your male privilege, you don't get to come up and just, you know, chat a woman up because, you know, she's just existing.
I had an experience at the grocery store the day before Friday. So the day before Christmas Eve, I was getting some stuff. It was an ice storm here. So I'm at the grocery store, and there was this cute older woman in front of me. I'm 42. She's maybe like early 50s. So she was talking to the kid who was ringing her out, and I forget exactly what she said, but she said something, and I bumped in myself into the conversation, just trying to be nice and a little flirty, you know. And she bit my head off nicely. And
hey, in what way?
No, she was just like, I'm not talking to you. I was like, oh, okay, not talking to me.
Okay.
But, you know, I get it. Like it was, and you said male privilege, which I was exercising, and I, you know, it's funny because I try not to offend anybody, but hey, what are you going to do? It happens.
Yeah. Well, and before and after transition, I've always been one of those. I like people,
mm-hmm.
And I like to talk, but I try to, and even before. I tried to rein it in because not everybody just wants to be talked to by a random stranger. If an opportunity arises for me to help somebody, I will try to be helpful.
You're probably like what you probably do. What I do, like if someone's online in front of me and they're having a problem, I know the answer to, or maybe I don't know the answer, but I know how to get them on the road to their answer. I just butt in and tell them what to do.
Well, I mean, I was in the Wiggling Pig the other day. And a woman came up, and there was one of the store workers who was standing there trying to unload this huge shrink-wrapped pallet of groceries, you know, to put them on the shelf. She was obviously busy as hell, and the lady asked her, where is the Hidden Valley Ranch mix? Apparently she was not a regular of the Wiggling Pig. And my friend who works at Piggly Wiggly was like, and I was like, no, stop. Keep doing what you're doing. And I said, here, let me help you. And I said, there it is. And took her like two or three aisles over and pointed it out to her on the top of the shelf, the Hidden Valley Ranch powder. And it was perfect. I got a Hidden Valley Ranch problem, powder problem. I mean, I could probably do a couple of rails right now.
Oh my God.
But, you know, it was innocuous, but then I rewound it in my mind and wondered if I did the right thing.
Yeah.
But the interaction was perfectly nice. And I said, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, enjoy your ranch, and went about my business. But it's not always that way.
I got a funny blind person story for you.
Okay. Okay.
So I go to the liquor store the same Friday. This is before the lady was mean to me. So this is, so I'm at the liquor store trying to find my Seagram's VO, okay? And I'm looking on the one side of the aisle, and I can't read the labels, but I have enough vision where if I walk down the aisle slowly, I can see, like, the Seagram 7 on the bottom shelf. I see the big 7, you know. Now, it could say anything, but I'm pretty sure that's the 7, okay? Right? You know what I mean? Like, it's a vague amount of vision, but it gets you in the wheelhouse, right? Well, I can't find my VO. I don't see the V, I don't see the O, I don't see the tan-ish label. Can't find it. So I hear, because I'm visually impaired, I'm looking towards the windows, it's all glare, I can't see anything. I see a man, and I hear, though, with my ears, I hear, doot, 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 someone is doing inventory control in the aisle that I'm in.
That's so pretty damn perceptive.
So I turn to the man right next to me, assuming it's him doing the inventory correction, and I say, hey, you're helping the blind guy now. I'm looking for VO. And he goes, what? And I said, you know, VO, you know, Seagram's VO, you know, Canadian whiskey. And he's like, oh, yeah, oh, all right. So then a couple minutes goes by, and he hasn't moved. So I'm like, that's interesting. And then he goes,
oh, no.
He goes, are you talking to me? And I said, yeah. I said, I'm looking for. And he goes, hold on, buddy. And he walks up the aisle and he hands it to me. And he goes, I don't work here. He goes.
Yeah. And you look up and you go, and I'm blind.
And I was just like, hey man, thanks for helping the blind guy out. And he goes, this is the funniest part, and this is where you wonder what people are thinking when they open their mouth. He goes, I've been there, buddy. I've been there.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he say, I've been blind drunk a couple of times. I got into the wood alcohol once or twice.
I was dead nuts sober, too. Like, I hadn't drank anything all day. Like, it was not... I wasn't hungover. I probably was stoned, but that's besides the point. So after the light changed, when we changed angles, he was wearing a camouflage jacket and he was bald like me. And the guy was actually an old lady who was doing the inventory control in the same aisle. She was like, you know, in a little apron, like, you know, hit with a little scanner. So I was so disturbed I bought two bottles. Just saying.
Just for expiation's sake, right?
Figure I'm going to finish the one before I get to the house. I might as well have the one I went to town for. So, no.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like you know, gathering manna before the Sabbath. You got to make sure you don't run out.
Well, you know, it was the thing too. Like, it was going to be Christmas. It was going to be New Year's. I figured if anybody does come by, you know, could always offer him a drink.
Yeah, that's neighborly. You know, if you don't have an old earthenware crock with a little finger handle and the corn cob stuffed in the top, yeah, you can give him the store bought stuff.
We're a little short on any of the moonshine this year, so.
Oh, I can't remember the last time I had it, you know, because now that you can buy it in the store, I mean, that's not moonshine. That's not moonshine.
It's not the same. No. Never mind.
You like that little lighter? You like that little lighter fluid bite to it, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to taste dangerous. That's the whole idea of good moonshine. You're supposed to think as you're drinking it, is this okay?
Yeah, and you treat it like regular, and then you try to walk to the bathroom.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah,
that's why I stopped drinking vodka. For the exact reason, similar to moonshine. Drink too much, too quick, it's over. From zero to a hero and then, throwing up on myself. Not good.
Well, I'll tell you what, our sister Jude in the Great Northwest has enjoyed our conversation. The feelings, she said, indeed, human feelings flow neither right nor wrong. They just are. Unless acted upon for reactionary release, where so much more is, it offers a neutral place of intellectual and spiritual decision-making, and said this is a multi-level healing program.
Oh, absolutely.
And she said, excellent dialogue. Thank you both. It's helped me process. I'm glad, Jude. I'm glad. But, we have been all over the place this evening. Are you doing okay?
Me, I'm groovy.
Okay. Well, I wondered where you went because you disappeared for a while there, and I didn't realize it was all because Alexa had forgotten where we were.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a little bit of a disconnect there, and
did you lose your phone or something? Because I texted you the other day because we were having a car question from Lady B. And of course I'm as useless as a screen door on a submarine in that, but I immediately thought, Arnold. And I texted you and you said, who's this? And I said, Robin. And you said, who do you think this is? I said, Arnold. You said, you're right.
Exactly. So I have an S, and do not buy one of these if you don't own one already. I have an S22, which is one of Samsung's alleged good phones.
Right.
And I'm at least 10 years with Samsung, with the exception of one Pixel, which I regret. Anyway, this latest phone, the contacts, when I brought the contacts over, just syncing my regular Google stuff, it jumbled a bunch of names up, did a bunch of goofy stuff I don't really understand. And the other problem that I have is if I go in my steel garage or like a Walmart or anywhere that's like a steel building, and it goes from Wi-Fi back to 5G. On that transition, I may not get texts for days from a person.
Holy shit.
My friend Shannon. Yeah, no, it's crazy. So then the solution to this, for whatever it's worth, is you restart the phone. And then every text you've missed for like a week comes to the phone. And so now I've been restarting the phone once a day because I can't trust it to not do that. For instance, like when you do, like, I was like, I know who you are. You're Robin, formerly, and duh, it's Robin. But I had to make sure it was, actually you and not some random person just with a 304 area code, like, punking me. Because, the modern world.
Yeah, people spoof phone numbers.
That happened to Rick Smith. Last year, I was in the with my daughter at the hospital for a week twice. And one of the times I was there, I had talked to Rick on the phone because he was, giving me time. I wasn't helping at the time. And we had spoke, and someone had called him from his daughter's cell phone number and said a whole bunch of horrible stuff, just off the wall. I won't repeat.
Oh my God.
Stuff, from his kid's number and name on the caller ID. Turns out, it's like $15 to like spoof somebody's phone number through some criminal website in Europe. So that's what this person did. And then so Rick was like really shook up by it. Like he figured the whole thing out.
Oh, poor guy.
And then, like a week later, the same person from another number, some insurance company, called up and did the same thing to him again. And he figured it out like a couple seconds into the phone call, that it was the same person, different game. And, they had an exchange and it stopped happening. But just think about how messed up it is. And you're, as a broadcaster, I'm sure you've been harassed. I'm sure you've received it, like, just like him, the hate emails,
sure,
the hate real mail, the people in the store that, you know, stop you and say, I know who you are, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You're not wrong. But speaking of which, and I think about this when you say things like, you know, Alexa stopped finding the horn. At the end of every month, because I mentioned this on Facebook and Twitter yesterday, I said, well, it's that time of the month, because at the end of every month, I apparently go over my allotment. Does Rick still use Podbean?
Yeah, and I think it's on the, like, $100 a year tier. Whatever that.
Well, I mean, I'm paying it. I pay it every month. Not $100 a month, but it actually, it's like $10 a month, so it works out to $120 or whatever. It's supposed to be unlimited uploads.
Now, here's the thing. You're doing 3 hours a day?
Yeah, 5 days a week.
So we're doing 2 5-days. So it's 10. So you're putting up 15 hours. We're putting up 10 hours.
And without fail, you know, you have uploaded too many. You've uploaded too much to your unlimited uploads. So screw you. So yesterday's program didn't go to Podbean. Today's program won't go to Podbean. Tomorrow's program won't go to Podbean. And I won't be able to. And so I'll have to upload these last three shows on January 1st, which then means that, you know,
It'll mess up January.
But January would be messed up even if I didn't upload them, because there's just not enough, you know, there's not enough time unless, you know, I miss a day or something like that. And it's really infuriating because people then turn around and assume that I've just, you know, taken off and gone out swanning around off on a grand gallivant, you know.
You're on holiday.
Yeah. I've gone shushing in Stad. No.
What you've done. No, I know what people perceive you've done.
The Gulfstream. You know, I've taken the Gulfstream 5 and flown off to. Because we live so large here, and you know, that's why we're doing things like sweating power bills and sweating water bills and sweating every other bill. It gets wearisome.
One of these mornings you're free. Just call me, text me, whatever, and let's get together on the phone and figure out what that actually is happening to you, whether you're running out of disk space with them, or let's just nail down what that reasoning is.
Okay. I know what the reasoning is. They want more money from me that I do not have. And, you know, it's not like they promote me.
No, they're bad about promoting anybody. They're another one of those, like, self-serving companies.
They're Chinese. I bitch and complain and piss and moan about you know, TikTok, but Podbean is owned by the People's Republic of China too.
Oh, is it really?
Oh yeah.
Oh great.
Yeah, it's horrible, but it's also at least nominally affordable. And I don't know if Rick puts his program out via TuneIn, but you know, we give the program to TuneIn for free.
Right.
And then they run ads for ExxonMobil on my back.
Yep.
And I never see a dime. And it
has
it sucks.
All the places the show is now that allow commercial, whatever they call it, monetization or whatever, it's all done, and he doesn't see really any of that. And the thing is, it's just like music. The artist gets effed. They cut up your show. They stop and start to stream. You know, for instance, Spotify and TuneIn both, if you're a free user, not the person who puts the show up, but the listener, if you listen via the app for free, they stop and start to stream at random to inject any commercial they want. So you get nothing of value from that service if that happens. You know, you're better off going to your website or Rick's website or directly to the source.
Yeah, that's why we – and again, you know, people say, well, you know, there's something wrong at TuneIn. Can't help it. Don't have any control over that. If you want to make sure that you're listening to the show every night, you go to HeadOn.live and you listen via the HeadOn.live stream.
Yep.
But I realize that on a podcast basis, people have lots of different places they like to listen from. People say, well, you know, it hasn't shown up at Apple Podcasts for a while. Can't help it. You know, that's
on... Rick lost a bunch of listeners for Apple Podcasts, so that we had the same exact problem. So you could go to the iTunes and search, and you'd see the show, but you could not download the effing show from iTunes. And that was a problem on their end. And no one will ever believe you because they're Apple and you're not.
Yeah, and it's absolutely true. And it's intensely frustrating. I
want to say this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Say this to any other broadcasters listening, anybody who produces a show, anybody who, you know, just in general to anybody who might be listening, it's not your fault when shit goes wrong. Stay calm as possible, sort it out, never say you're sorry. You and me may disagree about that. Never say you're sorry, carry on. Hold your head up, carry on. Because in broadcasting, I don't care if you have no money or all the money, shit just happens.
That's absolutely true, but that's also the reason that over the years I have sort of, and perhaps to my own detriment, insisted that, you know, being able to stream from White Rose and being able, and that's even down, I need to talk to Ben, but being able to stream from HeadOn.live, you know, Google can't demonetize me. YouTube can't demonetize me. Twitter can't demonetize me. Because we're non-monetized in the first place and entirely supported by listener contributions. And this would be a great time with about 15 minutes left in the program for me to note. To finish the month of December and the week, this week and the month and the year, we are at $805 to at least be funded within the parameters of our established goals, even though for some reason, well, you know, inflation is a bitch. And
oh my God, yeah.
Everybody else has been eaten alive by it, and, you know, I live downstream from everybody else, and it's taken a toll here. I had somebody reach out to me a couple of days ago saying, you know, please, you know, money's tight, I got to stop my subscription. And I said, I saw that you already did that yourself, so... You know, I really can't do anything more than what you've already done. And went ahead and said, listen, don't feel like because you're not a subscriber anymore that you should stop listening. I want you to listen. I want you to be part of the conversation. I want you to be part of the dialogue. I want you to be part of the community. Yeah. Because that's the kind of urge that drove me and drives Rick Smith and people like Tara Devlin and Malloy and, you know... It's not about, you know, it isn't that right-wing urge for the Gulfstream 5.
Right.
You know, I got enough worries just keeping a Ford on the road, okay? I don't need to worry about a Porsche. The stupid check engine light's on right now. It needs brakes, needs tires, and, you know.
What is it? So what year, what?
It's a 2016 Ford Fusion.
So it's actually they're okay. They do have some issues, you know.
It's been a great car.
Yeah.
And wow. You know, I got I've had it since Ferg totaled the Mazda. What was that? 2017, 2018. It's got 95,000 miles on it now. I bought it with like 30. So, mm-hmm. and the problem, you know, the thing is, God, we're off in the weeds now, Arnold, but if you live in rural anywhere, you are going to hang miles on an automobile. I mean, I'd love to have an electric automobile, but to a certain extent, those things are not optimized for West Virginia, if that makes any sense.
No, it's true. Like, so I have friends. They're very good friends of mine. They have a Tesla. They drive very short distance, 20 miles or less, to work. It works. It's a charging station where he works. They're a two-car household, though. So he has a Tesla that is technically the wife's. She never drives it. And then the wife has a Hyundai Accent, just totaled it yesterday, so that's out. But very small economical car. And so the Tesla, though, if you go to Philly, which is 2 hours and 30 minutes from my driveway, we take the Tesla, you must charge at some point. The charge is like $12, so that's kind of cool. But if you, like, if you tried to use a Tesla where I live and didn't install the fast charger at your house, it would never work. It would absolutely never work. And I hate to say it, but it's like where you live, I'm sure. You're far from everything. So you're basically...
Well, I mean, it's like something I talked about a few weeks ago. They closed down our Walgreens, which used to be our Rite Aid.
Right.
And so now we've got a 30-mile round trip to go and pick up prescriptions.
So it's 14 out, 14 back? 15 out, 15 back?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm seven from a Rite Aid and a crappy CVS.
And you know, we can manage that. It's a pain in the ass. But there's a lot of older folks in my community, Arnold, for whom that presents an existential crisis.
Absolutely. Same here.
There's no other pharmacy around here.
When you see them on the road, some of these old folks, like that 4 or 5 miles they run the town, that's all the miles they know. They don't have enough vision left for anywhere else. They can run there and back out of habit. I get it. You know, now they got to take a half hour run. That changes everything.
Right, and then you know, with four dollar and change, I mean, gas is finally dropping down to like $3.29 a gallon.
What are you paying for? We use kerosene in our shop. It's $7 a gallon here, $6.99.
Oh, yeah, and see, that's another thing. We've got a 6-month-old baby in the house, so
yeah, it can't be cold.
Can't be cold and can't burn kerosene because yeah. I don't want my little granddaughter breathing that filth.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So that you know that means we run electric space heaters. And that's how I wind up with an $800 power bill in a month's time.
Will they let you pay the winter months over the whole year?
No.
Do they do any of that?
No. Oh. I mean, they'll do the payment plan thing, but it winds up being no benefit because that just means that during the spring and the autumn months when everything's turned off, you're still paying a ginormous power bill.
Yeah, you're still a $400 electric bill. Yep.
Yeah.
Not helpful.
I mean, it's
So I just realized it's almost 8. Let me run. As far as Podbean, one of these days, call me. I'd love to help.
Okay.
Anything like that, even the car stuff. You know that. If you just reach out to me.
Oh, yeah. And I appreciate it, Arnold. I'm so glad you called in. I miss you when you're always a fantastic call, and I always enjoy it. And we get into some silly redneck horse shit. And
redneck stuff. I can always do the redneck thing, no problem.
Just to loop it all back together. I just had a message from somebody talking about Andrew Tate and the Romanian, and I know it's cruel. I know it's cruel, but it's not like these are nice people anyway, and I'm not a Christian, so I don't have to worry about that stuff.
Go ahead.
I hope Romanian jails really suck and are full of big, strong, buff, horny men.
Why'd you go into jail? What'd he do?
Oh, you didn't know this? Yeah, he's a dumbass, and so in his attempt to post a video response to Greta Thunberg after she burned him to the ground yesterday. He posted a video response and he said, yeah, hand me those two pizzas there. And so somebody hands him a couple of pizzas. They kind of look vaguely like Domino's boxes, but they're not.
Yeah.
And they've got the address of a Romanian pizza joint on them. The cops had interviewed him for 5 hours back in April for him having basically kidnapped and kept against their will a couple of young girls, one of whom had American citizenship.
Oh, Christ.
And used them and abused them and forced them to perform for, you know, porn reels. And then, you know, he bugged out after he got questioned. But then, lo and behold, he had bragged about going back to Romania because they had such lax laws against sexual assault.
He said the last video, all the videos I've seen, he brags about living in Romania.
Well, but this time he brought the pizza boxes in that had an address, so they were able to affirmatively note his location, and the Romanian police showed up and carried out him and his skeevy brother Tristan, and we find ourselves saying, gee, I hope Romanian jails are awful and are filled with horny, strong Romanian built men.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is funny. I must have been calling in when you were talking about that. Cause so you could use his own videos against him in the rape trial.
Yeah. If there is one, sure. I mean, if you deep dive on, this is a guy who talks about his brain working too fast for him to read anything. He's probably functionally illiterate.
So, fellow brilliant person, I say this to you humbly, I say, people are supposed to tell you you're smart. You're not supposed to tell people that you are smart.
Yeah, you don't walk around saying, I have the best genes, and I'm a genius. I'm a very stable genius. No.
You know, I was one of those people in school. I didn't have to even take the test. I went in there. I said, son of a bitch, I know all the answers. You just point me in a direction, I'll give you the answer. You know, I didn't read the books. I just showed up, you know? No, it doesn't work like that.
Well, no, it doesn't. And I swear to you know, you are living proof, Arnold. You are living proof of the old gag that Pennsylvania is comprised of Pittsburgh in the west, Philly in the east, and Alabama in the middle, because I could take that voice and drop it right smack dab in the middle of Arab, Alabama, and by God, they wouldn't know you born there.
So what you need to know is it's not Alabama. It's Dacrum County, Arkansas. You got to get it right. It's Dacrum County. Think about it. Come on.
Dacrum County, Arkansas, yes.
So Dacrum, of course, being decorum.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So or near Dardanelles in Yell County, Arkansas, if you're a fan of the original True Grit movie.
So I'm in I'm with my dad and a couple of lady friends in a barbecue joint in Virginia. And everybody around us is talking redneck.
Of course.
All this stuff, right? So I used to go on the CB radio, and where that voice came from was I used to bark all kinds of lunacy and nonsense on the CB radio, trying to make people laugh. They'd tell me to shut up and all that. And so we're at this restaurant, and my dad and I start going back and forth quietly at the table in this accent. And we're both Italian. So what happens is what started off quiet between us as a family wound up being him and I leaning back in the chair, full-blown yawling it up.
Well, yawling it up, yeah. Yawl-cada.
All of a sudden, we realize that the only people in the restaurant talking
were y'all.
So thank God. In a weird, mystical kind of way, there was a horrendous car accident outside. And
I don't know if I want to hear the end of this.
As a result of the horrendous car accident, everybody, like, ran to the windows, and they were like, oh, shit, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And so we were able to...
God damn, Andrew Tate done wrecked his Bugatti. Sorry.
So we were able to just kind of, like, roll the accents off. You know, just roll the...
Yeah.
Anyway, we got away with it. So, but, so...
Okay.
So I could still do the Southern voice. I used to do a really mean black preacher. I don't know why, but I just...
Yeah, don't do that anymore.
I try it, it doesn't work. No, I used to go do it really well. It just doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. Doesn't come out.
But your redneck is top shelf.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, I could drop into that, like, anywhere.
Yeah, maybe. So it for some reason or another, it made me want a Pabst Blue Ribbon real bad.
Oh, Pabst is good. I like the, you know?
Yeah, I do. I do, too. I mean, you know, I think it's better than fancy beers like Budweiser.
Well, Budweiser tastes like glue. I mean, that's like Elmore.
Well, why do you think they got them horses? Of course it tastes like glue. Arnold, take care of yourself. It's so good to hear from you. Don't be such a stranger.
We'll do. And if you need anything, hit me up.
All right,
everybody.
Later. See you, Arnold.
Bye, Rob.
The one and only Arnold calling from Pennsylvania. Oh, my God. What a conversation. That was all over the place. That was exactly how this program is supposed to work. A couple of emails. First, from Scary Jerry. Apparently, he enjoyed the conversation between Arnold and me. That's the subject line. Robin, I recognize the speech written patterns that you speak about. They work in packs, and the speech doesn't meander like American speech does. Americans state their point, tell a story, restate their point, and then meander off. These cybots will jump into a conversation, bringing emotional points, and then disappear and reappear with a pack. You're right as well. They usually text in 11 to 14 word pattern. Americans type in 3-5-7 word pattern. Americans use slang as an art form, sometimes two words standing for a preposition and a curse word. They also speak in grunts and groans and rarely say exactly what they mean. These cybots are linear and they rarely storytell and angry. Cybots are rarely happy about shit. Also, I heard a vicious rumor that the Matrix was actually stolen from a trans woman of color, so intrigue grows. Cervical orgasms are a thing. They're involuntary, infrequent, and usually the action is a ways away. Cervical pounding will get you grounded and lifted home. Incels. A pocket pussy is not anatomically accurate. Buy a girl a drink, light her cigarette, and pretend like you like her, you like her mother. It's a big world out there. Okay, thank you, Scary Jerry. Man, you are all over the place. Let's see here. I had a note from our buddy Laborman out in New Mexico. Cement company versus Teamsters. I meant to ask Arnold about whether Rick had said anything about this case. Cement company versus Teamsters. Seems to me the cement company kept losing in the lower courts. That may be due to the hold harmless clause within the collective bargaining agreement between the parties. That hold harmless clause usually goes both ways between the parties. I wouldn't be surprised, but by the same token, we don't live in a normal world anymore, and they know that they've got a bunch of maniacs on the court, and they may well get their way, and if they can get money damages from the Supreme Court, then it's game over for any union that wants to strike, especially a little one. And Jack in Shreveport said, remember, wasn't there something that was proposed for the TPP or other legislation that labeled any action that impeded a company from earning its profits an act of economic terrorism? Oh, hell yeah, the state of North Dakota passed that law. There are people in prison who simply protested the Keystone pipeline. And, you know, the Republican North Dakota legislature, or was it South Dakota? Dakotas, said, fuck all y'all and fuck your First Amendment, and stuffed them in prison. And I think some of those are still under appeal. Thank you very kindly to an anonymous friend of the program. Thank you so much. We are now down to $705 for our community-made miracle. And the end of December and the end of 2022. Thank you so much. Let's see. I love learning the etymology of phrases. Thank you. Thank you to our buddy Irish Dave. Make one's skin crawl. That looks fun. I'll check that out after the program. There we go. Thank you, Ralphs. Anti-feminist social media. Anti-feminist, yeah.
Feminism is destroying the world.
Andrew Tate arrested in Romania on human trafficking charge. Check out the group's name. Seems like picking a fight with Greta Thunberg opened up the lead for Romanian police to locate this dipshit. Karma, heh. Maybe he'll use his Bugatti to make a getaway. And, according to the Romanian newspaper Gandul. Thanks, Ralphs. Thanks so much. And hey, we were down to 7:05. And thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. So Friday on the front porch tomorrow, and fingers crossed. And between now and then, well, maybe we'll have some more good news about Andrew Tate. Ugh. Anyway, thank you to each and every one of you who keep this program going. Thank you to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. We had lots of cops in the chat room this evening. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, with, Tara Devlin and me sitting in for Malloy, and we'll do it one more time tomorrow night. Hope y'all are enjoying it as much as we're enjoying doing it. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, HeadOn.live, because, hey, like Arnold and I were talking about, no commercials. And look, please like, subscribe, and comment wherever it is that you're listening to the program. That really does help out in a big way. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And a proud union shop. The union there is the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, the Wobblies. And it'll be a year as a union shop come next month or thereabouts. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Get your flu shot. Wipe down your surfaces. Help stop the spread of RSV. Keep the little ones safe. Wear your mask. It's mask wearing time. Because China's blowing up and we'll be blowing up soon too. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer wherever possible. Carry some with you. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And of course, if you run across somebody babbling about how their mama was born in Belgium, Brazil. Well, avoid that pathological liar like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.